turned to the sports page, and the Mets had blown it in the 13th inning. Papers can't make losing look like winning. I think the Phillies took it 5-4. There it was on the sports page. Only page that takes a firm position. Kind of like an honest politician. But kind you hardly find anymore. In fact, let's face it, the sports page is the only place to go when a fella wants to know the score.
The arguments are happening already, Fred. You're missing out in the studio. It's time for the sports page. I'm Heidi Holton with John Bauer, Kyle Erickson. Fred Friedman joins us via Zoom with the lovely bookcase behind
him. And arms crossed because he's all business today.
I know. But I want to start, okay?
Yep.
The senior correspondent has sent some headlines from around the region. Some
high school sports.
That's right. So congratulations go out to Greenway Raiders girls softball team. Undefeated 25-0 season. Section 7 AA champions. And the Cherry Tigers, Section 7A champs. Raiders and Tigers both lost in the quarterfinals of the state tournament this week. But in boys baseball, congratulations to Section 7A champion Southridge and Section 8A champs Fauston. Both teams lost in quarterfinals. And the Aiken Gobblers, boys baseball, 7AA champs, won their quarterfinal game 2-0 over second seed Albany, and they lost to Belle Plaine in the semifinals and took the third place title. And in Class 3A baseball tournament, Section 7 champions Grand Rapids defeated Marshall 6-2 in the quarterfinals and St. Thomas 4-3 in the semifinals. Grand Rapids is going to play Matamidi for the 3A state title tomorrow at 4 o'clock at Target Field. There we go.
And I always get a little bigger grin when a rural school beats a metro-based private school in the state tournament.
It's not just hockey we feel that way about. Yes, it's any sport.
All sports. I love it.
Welcome, Fred. Good morning. He's coming.
look at the look.
Studio.
There we go.
Good morning, Fred. So, Fred, I'm wondering, I'm going to ask you a couple questions. If you have to maybe walk out and get the mail or walk down the hall at UMD, or Kyle, if you have to simply get up in the morning and go start your truck, if you have some stiffness in your ankle, do you shut her down for the day?
Residual soreness, the malady.
No, of course not.
What the hell is going on?
So the only thing I can think why Byron Buxton hasn't suited up for the Twins yet, his stats with the St. Paul Saints in his rehab stint were cartoonish. He batted over 500. His OPS was like 13. It was ridiculous. He's absolutely ready to play. The Twins are treating him with baby gloves, and the only reason I can think of is because they have given up on this season. And they don't want to do anything to risk his health, whether they decide to trade him, and they should be able to get a pretty fair price. I hope they don't trade him, but if they do, they want to protect him, or protect him if they're going to give him an extension. So here's where they're at. We are 94 games into the season. The Twins are 16 games behind the White Sox. That means if the White Sox, doing some quick mental math, if the White Sox went 50-44, which is a pretty low bar considering they're 16 or 18 games over 500 right now, the Twins would have to go, 66-28 the rest of the way to catch them. That ain't happening. So the Twins are in the mode now of deciding which pieces they want to keep and build around, and which pieces they're going to trade at or before the trade deadline.
So, Fred, you're the GM, and you know they're grinding behind the scenes. What do you do? How do you do this? And are we talking now like a three-year plan to get the Twins back to somewhat normalcy, or what?
Yeah, if I'm the GM, I'm doing a couple of things. One, I'm getting my medical staff together. They got burned with bringing back Morneau too soon. They got burned on Maurer's head.
Donaldson.
Now there's a situation where now they want to be super, super cautious. I'm not persuaded that Byron Buxton wants to be a Twin. He's still angry for them taking away that a season of free agency because they didn't bring him up a couple of years ago. And, hey, he's got a grudge about it, and I totally understand it. But you can't give him a ton of money because he doesn't play often enough. So to answer your question, if I'm the GM, I take a hard look at my scouting. I got to decide why we can't draft and develop pitchers. You guys understand that since the draft after we won the World Series in 1991, here's the number of successful pitchers we have drafted. Five, guys, five. Radke, Perkins, Guardado, Barrios, and maybe one more. I'm talking five pitchers we've drafted and developed in 30 years. Think what I, and oh, and Rogers. Think what I just said. Five in 30 years.
30 years.
So and if you look at some of the good arms coming up in the system, some of them are guys that they've drafted. We don't know if they'll stick as major leaguers. But some of the guys making an impact now, like Jorge Alcala, weren't drafted and developed. He's a product of the Ryan Pressly trade.
That's my whole point. We're doing far better with offensive players and position players. So I got to figure out why we're not doing that. If I'm GM, you got to get rid of Sano. I don't care how much money it costs you. You got to do something. They're way overpaying Donaldson, and I know he's on a multi-year contract. I'm sick and tired of them saying, why do they keep saying to the press, we got to play our two young left-handed hitting corner outfielders every day. For them to be sending that signal to the press, that's saying we can't play them every day and Kepler every day and Buxton every day. That's four outfielders for three positions, all right? Mm-hmm. Unless they've given up on Kirkhoff and they're going to move him to first base and dump Sano, which is fine with me.
Yeah,
but none of this matters, guys, because if they don't get far more pitchers, it's a waste of brain cells.
Well, like last night, why did they yank Ober after four innings? What, he had like 76 pitches? Being 23 years old, you can't throw 78 pitches?
Super cautious.
Yeah.
I think that, and that, another thing I think it is, the percentage of breaking ball pitchers that pitchers are throwing in the major leagues, it's too high. In our lifetimes, you understand, it's gone from almost 70% to just over 30%. More breaking ball pitches you throw, more likely you're going to have elbow and wrist and shoulder situations. Cut. So I don't like it. I think we over-talk about the offense and don't talk enough about the lack of pitching. We're throwing pitchers out there that are jokes, guys.
Yeah.
Well, two of the off-season signings that I think we all shook our heads at where they tried to plug two spots in the rotation with the shambling corpses of J.A. Happ and Mr. Colomé. Shoemaker.
And Colomé.
And, well, Colomé again, that's a defensible signing. He was great 3 years in a row. Happ and Shoemaker, it was pretty clear they had nothing left in the tank, and that's why they were available on a one-year contract. Nobody wanted them.
So every year we're doing that. They got to improve their scouting and drafting of pitchers. It's as simple as that.
Okay, so let's talk about pitchers now. We're talking 10-game ban for using an illegal substance. Is that in effect, or is that going to be next year negotiated with unions and stuff?
It's in effect starting Monday morning.
Whoa.
Yeah. And not only is it a 10-game ban, but you cannot bring up somebody from the minors to replace them.
Ooh. Oh, wow. I hadn't heard that part.
So it's a penalty to your team. But you understand the rule has always been there. Always been there. It's just they've disregarded it.
Yeah. The game last night, Dick Bremer, I don't know if you saw it. The ball barely hit the ground, and the catcher threw it to the dugout. He's saying, if we're going to do this, hand the ball to the umpire, let him take a look at it, you know, and get rid and make whatever decision he makes.
Yeah, and that's important because one of the notable suspects in this is the Yankees' Gerrit Cole, who has had an otherworldly start to the year. And I've noticed several games that I've watched where the Yankees, where he was pitching, a ball in the dirt, the catcher immediately, even if they were on the road and the catcher would typically throw it to the home team's dugout, the Yankees catcher would throw it to the Yankees dugout. Yeah. And Cole, Cole's asked some pretty pointed questions about it about a week and a half ago, and he dodged the questions in the same way a kid might dodge a dodgeball and get hit squarely in the nose with it. And it's clear that pitchers are either going to have to change what they're doing or face that penalty for the team. I want one more thing about the Twins pitching. I think this is really important. There are some people who are saying, Jose Berríos, that the Twins have to make an extension or trade decision soon. He's got 2 years or a year and a half left on his contract. Fred made a good point at how bad the Twins are at developing pitching. They may have to pay Jose Berríos borderline ace money, even though he's really a number two starter. Yeah. How in the world can you trade him when he is the only functioning pitcher you have on your team right now?
Right. You can't.
It would be a colossal mistake, and he's still improving.
I agree. You can't. And for folks that think we're over-talking about this, here's why this matters about the stuff on the ball. Most strikeouts in Major League Baseball since the World War II war years, when all the players were gone, right, mm-hmm. when they were all overseas. Most strikeouts in 74, 75, 76 years. So clearly the ball's being doctored. And I hate to say this, but the game's about attendance. And people do not go to watch 2-1 games. When you see guys like Gerrit Cole, who is just an ordinary starter for the Pirates, all of a sudden the ball is doing insane, crazy things, that's more than talent. Part of that's chemistry.
Hey, Fred, when did we get so strict with, or Kyle, strict with getting rid of baseballs? Like if it just, you know, maybe hits a lace on the catcher's glove.
Yeah, just 3-4 years ago.
Yes. It's definitely exciting. I can remember when the Twins won their first World Series in 87, and back in that era, you know, Burt Blyleven would spike a curveball in the dirt and the catcher would just fire it right back to the mound.
Because he's going to get more action on it. All right, let's talk about what else we got. The U.S. Open, we got a little fight going on. That's always fun to watch. It's at Torrey Pines. We got Bryson DeChambeau and... what's his name? Brooks Koepka fighting about abdominal muscles. And that's pretty exciting. Otherwise, there's hockey going on, basketball going on. Chris Paul has COVID. That's just amazing. And I think the rules with him now are because he has, when he tests his negative, he can go right back. Is that true? I think that's true.
I think it is true. Here's an educated guy from Wake Forest. This is not somebody right out of high school. Career guy, makes tons of money, as everybody knows, selling insurance for State Farm, right?
Yeah.
And it makes no sense to me. Hey, the Vikings announced, now think about this. The Vikings announced they got three players who won't get shots.
Yeah.
Sheldon Richardson, who they just brought back, and two of their five best players, Adam Thielen and Harrison Smith. Somebody want to explain to me in a sane world why those guys won't get shots?
Wow.
But, and that's important, too, because the NFL just within the last day or two clarified that they're going to maintain their really strict two-tier system for vaccinated, non-vaccinated players. And with training camps opening, for the first time, the NFL has a unified start date for training camp. I think July 27, all teams are going to open camp. For players who haven't had their second shot at least 2 weeks before opening of the camp, they are going to have to travel separately from the team. They're going to have to eat separately from the team.
Separately.
They're going to have to get tested every day. I mean, it's going to be an enormous headache for the team.
And Kyle, the union's on the same side. A union and the ownership's on the same side of this.
Yeah, which is a rarity. So that should tell you that this is not a case where there ought to be a lot of debate.
John, Kyle, we should mention that a historic twin died the other day, Jim Mudcat Grant. First American League, first African American pitcher in the American League to win 20 games. First African American pitcher in the American League to win a Cy Young Award. A heck of a singer, sung at many ballplayers' weddings and funerals. That's why we were in the 1965 World Series. Good person.
Probably one of the best nicknames too. Heidi, we gotta let you get in here. How's Mrs. Reeves doing? Miss Reeves doing these days?
Coach
Reeves.
Yeah, I noticed you guys haven't mentioned the Lynx. They're up and down. Holy cow! They played. They got blasted by Chicago this
week. At
home. Yes, but they will be playing tonight at Dallas, and then they're going to play on Saturday as well in Dallas, 7 p.m. for both games.
The classic.
So, you think this is absent players? Is it as simple as that?
No, it's not. Because a couple of play. Well, I just think they have not played together. It's such a new team, you know, and they're kind of relying on the.
But that was lack of energy. This last game was lack of energy.
But there were some. There were some good. I thought there were moments where like they're going to shoot ahead, and then all of a sudden turnover. That was just embarrassing. Tripping on the floor, you know, on nothing else but their feet.
I will say on public radio, I will accompany you to any Lynx game and buy your ticket.
All right. I'll take you up on that.
I will call your bluff on this.
All right.
The bad news is that the Lynx are 11th out of 12 teams in the WNBA standings, but the good news is that they're only one game out of the fifth spot. So there's a couple of teams that are just killing it this year, and the rest of them are all kind of packed together. So they're not out of the running.
Well, Nafisha Colliers set a record, her personal best, for points at that terrible Chicago game. So there were some good things happening.
Yes, but in basketball, you also have to play defense.
Yes, I know.
And when Miss Reeves was asked about how the defense was, she said, "What defense?" The classic coach response. Okay,
so
trivia.
All right, are you guys ready?
I'm not. I just know it's
going
to be
hang
a
in there.
One.
Come on now. So we're going to do baseball abbreviations first. RBI, shorthand for runs batted in.
Right.
Yeah.
CS.
Caught stealing.
LOB.
Left on base.
And WAR, WAR, do they say it?
Wins above replacement.
HBP.
Hit by pitch.
WHIP.
Walks and hits per nine innings.
MVR.
Most valuable.
MVR. Most valuable reliever? Is that a thing?
No, it can't be.
Mound visits remaining.
That's on the scoreboard. That's true.
Speaking of change.
Yeah. All right.
That's a good one.
Now we're moving into team nicknames and their golden years. What team's lineup was known as Murderer's Row?
Yankees in the 20s and early 30s.
Yeah.
Okay, now JB and Kyle first on this one. Name five of the players in the heart of the Murderer's Row lineup on the 1927 Yankees. Five players, please.
Okay, Ruth.
Yep.
Gehrig.
Yep.
John.
That's it. Wait a minute. Yogi Berra? No.
No, he was in the fields.
You want to finish him off there, Fred?
1 through 9. Here we go. Earl Coombs, Mark Koenig, Babe Ruth, Lou Gehrig, Bob Usual, Jumping Joe Dugan, and Ben Benable was the catcher.
Did you say Tony Lazzari?
Tony Lazzari. Push him up, Tony Lazzari. Push him up.
All right, so here we go. You guys first on this one, too. What team became known as the Whiz Kids?
1952.
Put him on mute. You can't answer.
Yeah.
Whiz Kids.
Yeah.
It's not like Dean the Chance.
He gave you the year, though. 1950.
Oh, boy.
All right, Fred, let's have it.
1950 Philadelphia Phillies.
All right, now you two need to name two of the Whiz Kids on that team who are in the Hall of Fame.
Dizzy Dean?
Nope.
He's a Cardinal, I think.
I know, I told you. That's not this.
Look at Fred. Look at Fred. Okay, Fred, lay it on us.
Robin Roberts and Richie Ashburn.
Yes.
Also Jim Constani and Kurt Simmons.
Well done.
All right, John and Kyle first on this one, too. Willie Jones was the third baseman on the 1950 Whiz Kids team. What was his nickname?
Oh, my goodness.
Wee Willie Jones?
Come on, Fred.
Toy Cannon?
No.
This is great. Guys, you're going to love this. Two things about Willie Puddinhead Jones. Last major leaguer to use a four-finger, one thumb, and three-finger glove.
Oh, wow.
Puddinhead.
And Puddinhead is reference to it, maybe a gargantuan head?
I assume so.
Okay.
Puddinhead Jones.
Yeah, no G on the end of that.
Oh, yeah, I know.
Drop your G, man.
No, I knew that.
Between 1970 and 1976, Cincinnati's Big Red Machine won 5 National League West Division titles, 4 National League pennants, and 2 World Series. Name 4 position players and 2 pitchers who were with the Reds all those years.
Tony Perez, Dave Concepcion,
Joe Morgan.
Not Joe Morgan. He didn't join the Reds till 1972.
Johnny Bench.
Yep.
There must be a pitcher in there.
Well, we got to come up with 2 pitchers, too.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Fred has to come up with 2 pitchers, too.
Fred's just quivering. He just wants to answer it so bad. But due to time, let's allow Fred to answer these questions.
What you got, Fred?
Bench, Lee May, Tommy Helms, Concepcion, Perez, George Foster, Cesar Guerrero, Ken Griffey Sr., pitchers, we had Jack Billingham, and we had Don Gullett.
Did anybody say Pete Rose?
Pete Rose, yeah.
I was going to. How did I miss that?
Yeah.
So today we've had a gullet and a pumpkin and a head?
Puddin' head.
Puddin' head, yep.
Nice.
Name the 2 teams the Reds lost to in the World Series and the 2 teams they defeated during the 1970s.
Yeah, they certainly lost to the Oakland Athletics, and they certainly lost to the Baltimore Orioles. 70-71.
Dodgers?
No, they defeated. That's a good question.
Did they defeat? In the
70s, they beat the Red Sox and the Yankees.
Yeah,
sure.
There you go. You got it.
That is so impressive.
Reds second baseman Joe Morgan was the National League most valuable player for the Reds in 75 and 76. Named 3 of their National League infielders to be MVPs in consecutive years.
What National League, did you say?
I did. Didn't I?
Ernie Banks.
Yep.
Are you putting a time frame on this or all time?
Ernie Banks.
Various times.
National League. MVP consecutive.
I can give you years.
There has to be some first baseman, probably. Ryan Sandberg won 1, but I don't think he
won. Steve Garvey.
First baseman 2008 and 2009.
Oh,
still
active. Albert Pujols.
Yes. And then the third baseman from 80 and 81.
Oh, Mike Schmidt?
Yep. There we go. That's it for today, you guys.
Wow, Fred, I notice when you are struggling or trying to go back in time, you look to your right and you stare.
Yeah, I wish I was that quick on the computer. You know what I mean?
he's going into his mind palace.
He is pulling
the info out.
I think we should rename the sports page to Mind Palace. There we go. Thanks, you guys. We gotta go. It's a sports
page.
Bye, everybody.
You have some questions you want to stump those guys with, you could always send them to us. Comments at kaxe.org.